A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's what Daniel sent us. He saw the Gallup stat. 70% of professional workers globally are disengaged. And his reaction was basically, is this real? Has it always been this way? And if managers are the root cause, are managers equally dissatisfied with their employees? Or is all the resentment flowing uphill? He's asking whether we're living in a world where most people are mentally checked out, and if so, what's actually broken?
The answer to, is this real, is, unfortunately, yes. Gallup's 2026 State of the Global Workplace report just dropped, and the numbers are 13% engaged, 62% not engaged, 25% actively disengaged. That 70% figure Daniel remembers is the combination of the not engaged and actively disengaged buckets. And here's the thing that should stop you cold. This number has barely moved in over 20 years.
Through the smartphone revolution, the gig economy, a global pandemic, the great remote work experiment, DEI initiatives, wellness programs, the needle didn't budge.
It didn't. Engagement rate has hovered around 30% since the year 2000. Gallup's been tracking this across more than 160 countries, and the pattern is structurally stable, which means we're not looking at a bad quarter or a pandemic hangover. We're looking at something baked into how modern organizations work.
Or don't work.
And that's the question Daniel's really poking at. If 70% of people are disengaged, and that number won't change no matter what we throw at it, is this a bug in the system or a feature of it?
Let's start with what those categories actually mean, because 70% disengaged sounds like 70% of people are miserable and hate their jobs, and that's not quite right. The 62% in the not engaged bucket, those are people showing up, doing the minimum, collecting a paycheck. They're not actively unhappy, they're just psychologically checked out. The 25% who are actively disengaged, those are the ones spreading negativity, undermining coworkers. They're not just absent, they're corrosive.
That distinction matters because it changes what we're diagnosing. If 70% of people hated their jobs, you'd have a crisis of morale. What we actually have is a crisis of meaning. Most people don't hate work, they just don't see why it matters, and nobody's giving them a reason to care.
Which is almost harder to fix. You can address misery with better conditions. Addressing meaninglessness requires something organizations are terrible at providing. Purpose, connection, a sense that what you do actually counts.
The scale here is staggering. Gallup estimates low engagement costs the global economy $8.8 trillion in lost productivity annually. That's roughly 9% of global GDP, more than the entire GDP of Japan and Germany combined.
We're not talking about a minor inefficiency. We're talking about a drag on the global economy. Roughly the size of the world's third and fourth largest economies stacked on top of each other. And nobody seems especially alarmed by it.
Because it's been this way so long, it's become invisible. Gallup's U data goes back to 2000, and the engagement rate has been pinned around 30% the entire time. Through boom years, through the financial crisis, through the pandemic, flat. The global average is even lower, around 23% engaged. South Asia and East Asia report engagement as low as 10 to 14%, so that global 70% disengagement figure is pulled down by regions where work is more transactional, more survival-oriented. But even in wealthy economies, two-thirds of people are checked out.
Which brings us to Daniel's second question. Why? And Gallup has a very specific answer, and it's not what most people expect.
It's not pay, it's not perks, it's not free snacks or ping pong tables or unlimited vacation. Gallup's 2026 meta-analysis finds that managers account for 70% of the variance in team engagement. That's the single strongest lever, quantified across thousands of teams globally.
The thing that most determines whether you care about your job is the person you report to. Not the company's mission statement, not the compensation package, not the office design. Your direct manager.
Here's where it gets bleak. Gallup also found that only 30% of U managers are themselves engaged at work. So you've got a population of managers who are mostly checked out, managing teams of people who are mostly checked out, and we're surprised the numbers don't move?
If your manager is going through the motions, they're not coaching you, they're not giving you meaningful feedback, they're not connecting your work to anything larger, and you absorb that, you learn that this is what work is. Show up, keep your head down, collect the check.
The why behind bad management is mostly a promotion problem. Most managers are promoted because they were good at their previous job. Top individual contributor, great engineer, great salesperson. Nobody assessed whether they'd be good at managing people. Gallup recommends a separate career track for management, with assessment of emotional intelligence and coaching aptitude before promotion, but almost nobody does it. We take the best coder and make them team lead, and then we're shocked when they can't coach, can't give feedback, can't inspire.
It's like taking your best violinist and making them the conductor, then being confused when the orchestra sounds terrible. Completely different skill set.
And the data bears this out. Gallup's 2026 report includes a case study of a manufacturing firm that shifted from a supervisor model to a coach. Model, managers stopped being compliance officers and started being development partners. Engagement rose from 18% to 42% in 18 months.
That's a massive jump, but there's a catch, isn't there?
They had to replace 40% of their frontline managers who couldn't make the shift. These weren't bad people. They just couldn't do the job as it needed to be done. And most organizations won't make that call. It's too expensive, too disruptive, too uncomfortable.
We've identified the problem. We've identified the mechanism, but we haven't addressed the asymmetry Daniel's asking about. Do managers feel the same way about their employees? Is there an equal and opposite dissatisfaction flowing downward?
This is the fascinating part. Gallup doesn't track it symmetrically. There's no how dissatisfied are you with your reports index. But engagement surveys show managers consistently rate their own engagement 20 to 30 percentage points higher than their employees rate theirs. There's a perception gap. Managers think things are fine. Employees don't.
Which is its own kind of problem. If you don't think there's a problem, you don't fix it.
And the turnover data tells a story the managers aren't hearing. Gallup's 2026 report found that 51% of employees are watching for or actively seeking a new job. More than half the workforce has one foot out the door. That's not a subtle signal. That's a fire alarm.
The dissatisfaction is asymmetric. Employees are voting with their feet, but the management layer isn't reporting equivalent frustration. They're not lying awake at night thinking my team is terrible. They're just not thinking about it at all in many cases.
Which loops back to the structural question. If the system were working, you'd expect some kind of equilibrium. Managers and employees both invested, both engaged. What we have instead is a system where managers are largely oblivious to the disengagement they're creating, and employees are quietly checking out or actively looking for the exit. That's not a failure of individual managers. That's a failure of organizational design.
The 70% figure has been stable for 2 decades because the underlying incentive structures haven't changed. Quarterly reporting still rewards short-term thinking. Promotion criteria still favor individual achievement over team development. Performance reviews are still episodic and backward-looking, rather than continuous and forward-looking. The bad manager isn't a rogue actor. They're the predictable output of a system that selects for the wrong traits.
Gallup's data on feedback frequency makes this concrete. Managers who hold weekly check-ins, not status updates, but actual coaching conversations, see 3 times higher engagement than those who don't. But most organizations don't structure for that. They structure for compliance, for reporting, for oversight. The coaching function is treated as optional, a nice to have if you've got time after the real work is done.
The real work in most organizations is reporting upward, making your boss look good, hitting the numbers, the stuff that actually builds engaged teams, development conversations, recognition, connecting work to purpose. That's all extracurricular.
Which means the 70% disengagement figure isn't a mystery. It's the completely predictable output of a system that was never designed to produce engagement in the first place. Organizations were designed for compliance and predictability. Engagement is a nice bonus if it happens, but nobody's optimizing for it.
Daniel's question, Is this real? Has it always been this way? The answer is yes and yes. The number is real. It's been stable for decades, and the cause isn't a sudden epidemic of bad bosses. It's a chronic condition of how we structure work. The more interesting question is whether we actually want to fix it, or whether the system is doing exactly what it was designed to do, just not what we pretend it's designed to do.
This is where we need to get precise about what Gallup is actually measuring, because engagement sounds soft, like a feeling, a vibe. But their methodology is specific. They're measuring 12 items, things like, I know what's expected of me at work, I have the materials and equipment to do my job right, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day.
It's not. Do you feel warm and fuzzy about the company? It's, do you have what you need to actually do your job?
And the drop-off across those 12 items tells its own story. Most people agree with the basics, they know what's expected, they have their equipment, but by the time you get to someone at work encourages my development or my opinions seem to count, the numbers crater. The engagement deficit isn't about comfort, it's about whether anyone at work sees you as a human being worth developing.
Which explains why the number's been stuck for 2 decades. We've gotten better at the basics. Better tools, better offices, better snacks. But the relational stuff, coaching, recognition, purpose, that hasn't scaled. You can't buy it in bulk.
The global data makes this even sharper. When Gallup says this covers 160 countries and includes both desk and non-desk workers, they mean factory floors in Bangladesh, call centers in Manila, software teams in San Francisco. The 70% figure isn't just knowledge workers with first world problems. It's people doing physically grueling work, people in survival economies, people who can't afford to be picky about their boss, and they're still reporting the same pattern.
Which answers Daniel's question about whether this has always been reality. Numbers been around 30% engagement since 2000. But if you look at the historical structure of work, the factory floor, the assembly line, the typing pool, those were never designed for engagement either. They were designed for throughput. The difference is, we've now attached language like purpose-driven culture and employee experience to organizations that are still fundamentally optimized for compliance.
The language changed. The underlying architecture didn't.
Which is almost worse. You've got people being told they should find meaning and fulfillment at work, and then being dropped into a structure that makes meaning impossible. That gap between the rhetoric and the reality, that's where the 62% not engaged bucket lives. They're not furious, they're just quietly disillusioned.
That disillusionment has a half-life. Gallup's data shows it doesn't stay quiet forever. The actively disengaged, the 25%, those are often people who were not engaged for years and eventually tipped into something more corrosive. They're not just checked out, they're actively undermining what they see as a broken bargain.
Which is where we get to the mechanism. If 70% of the variance in engagement comes down to the manager, and the system keeps producing managers who can't do the people side of the job, then the 70% disengagement number isn't a failure. It's the equilibrium state.
Here's what makes the manager effect so dominant. It's not one thing. Gallup's 12-item engagement survey covers everything from role clarity to development opportunities, and the manager touches almost all of them. They set expectations, they allocate resources, they decide whether your opinions count. Pay is mostly set by HR bands, perks are standardized. But whether you get to use your strengths every day, that's your manager's call.
It's also worth distinguishing between the types of bad management. Gallup's research points to 2 distinct failure modes. There's the actively bad manager, the toxic one, the bully, the micromanager. But those are relatively rare. The far more common type is the absent manager, the one who's checked out, who doesn't coach, who treats people management as an administrative burden rather than the actual job.
The absent manager is harder to spot from above because they're not causing visible problems. They hit their numbers, they don't generate HR complaints, they just don't develop anyone. Their team slowly disengages over years, and nobody notices until the turnover data comes in.
Like a slow leak in a tire. You don't feel it until you're riding on the rim.
And Gallup's data on manager engagement makes this worse. Only 30% of you managers are engaged. The other 70% are either not engaged or actively disengaged. A disengaged manager isn't going to coach. They're not going to have weekly development conversations. They're modeling disengagement, and their team learns from that model.
The causal chain is, promote the wrong people for the wrong reasons. Give them no training in the actual skills of management. Measure them on outputs rather than team development, and then act surprised when 70% of the workforce checks out.
On Daniel's question about causality versus correlation, Gallup has longitudinal data on this. When they track teams over time, manager change is the leading indicator. Same company, same pay, same office. Swap the manager, and engagement shifts dramatically. Gallup's 2026 report shows that switching teams within the same company can move engagement from the 20th percentile to the 60th percentile. That's not correlation, that's causation.
Which brings us to the perception gap. Daniel asked whether management reports equal an opposite dissatisfaction with employees. The answer is no, but not because employees are the problem. Gallup doesn't measure downward dissatisfaction symmetrically, but they do track manager self-assessment against team assessment. Managers consistently rate their own engagement and effectiveness 20 to 30 points higher than their teams do. They think they're doing fine. Their teams disagree.
That gap is self-reinforcing. If you think you're an engaged, effective manager, why would you change? The feedback that would tell you otherwise never reaches you because the people who could deliver it are disengaged and not speaking up, or they've already left.
The manufacturing case study in Gallup's 2026 report makes this brutally concrete. This firm shifted from a supervisor model to a coach model. Engagement jumped from 18% to 42% in a year and a half. But they had to replace 40% of their frontline managers who couldn't make the switch. These weren't toxic people. They just couldn't do the job as redefined.
That 40% replacement rate tells you everything about the system problem. Those managers weren't hired to coach. They were hired to supervise. When the job changed, almost half of them couldn't adapt. Most organizations never changed the job in the first place, so those managers stay in place for decades, producing disengagement year after year, and nobody can point to a single thing they did wrong, because they didn't do anything. That's the absent manager problem.
Which is why the just fire the bad manager solution misses the point. You'd have to fire 40% of them, and the pipeline of replacements was trained in the same system. You'd just be swapping one set of non-coaches for another.
The pipeline is the problem. Gallup's recommendation, and they've been saying this for years, is a separate career track for management with assessment gates before promotion. Test for emotional intelligence, coaching aptitude, communication skills. But most companies treat management as a promotion prize for high performers rather than a distinct profession with its own qualifying criteria.
It's the PETA principle with spreadsheets. Everyone rises to their level of incompetence, and in management, that incompetence directly damages everyone below them.
If managers are the lever, why hasn't the system fixed itself? That's where the structural story gets interesting. Because the 70% figure has been stable for 2 decades, and markets are supposed to correct for inefficiency. An $8.8 trillion drag on the global economy should trigger some kind of adaptation.
It should, but the adaptation mechanism is broken. Organizations don't feel the cost of disengagement directly. It shows up as diffuse productivity loss, not as a line item. If disengagement showed up on a quarterly earnings statement the way inventory shrinkage does, you'd see action tomorrow. Instead, it's distributed across thousands of small failures, projects that take too long, innovation that doesn't happen, talent that walks out the door.
Death by 1,000 paper cuts, and each cut is too small to justify a systemic response. And this connects to the geographic skew Daniel's question implies. When Gallup reports a global average of 70% disengaged, that number is pulled down dramatically by South Asia and East Asia, where engagement runs as low as 10 to 14%, and Australia hover around 30% engaged. So the global figure isn't describing a universal experience. It's an aggregate that masks enormous variation in what work even means across different economies.
Which matters because the fix looks different depending on where you are. In a survival-oriented labor market, where the alternative to a disengaging factory job is no job at all, the employer has zero incentive to improve. The worker can't leave. The market doesn't punish the disengagement because there's no competition for labor.
In wealthy economies, the dynamic is different, but the outcome is similar. The worker can leave, and 51% are watching for or actively seeking a new job, but they often land in another organization with the same structural problems. same promotion pipeline, same absent managers, same compliance, over-coaching design. You escape your bad manager and get assigned to a new one who is produced by the same system.
The labor market churns without correcting. People move, disengagement follows them, the aggregate number stays flat.
And this is where the asymmetry Daniel asked about gets really interesting. He asked whether management reports equal and opposite dissatisfaction with employees. The answer is no, but not because everything's fine from the management side. It's because organizations don't measure downward dissatisfaction at all. There's no "how frustrated are you with your direct reports" index. The measurement architecture only points one way,
which is itself a structural choice. If you only measure employee engagement and never measure manager satisfaction with their teams, you're implicitly defining the problem as workers are broken rather than the relationship is broken.
The turnover data suggests the dissatisfaction is deeply asymmetric. 51% of employees have one foot out the door. If managers were equally dissatisfied, you'd expect to see equivalent churn in the management layer, managers firing or pushing out underperforming reports at comparable rates, but you don't see that. What you see is managers who think things are fine while their teams are quietly disengaging or actively leaving.
The quiet quitting narrative captured something real, but it got the causality backwards. Quiet quitting isn't a worker behavior problem. It's the visible symptom of a system that's been producing disengagement for decades. People don't quietly quit because they're lazy. They quietly quit because they've learned that effort isn't reciprocated.
Gallup's data on feedback frequency makes this concrete in a way that cuts through the culture war framing. Managers who hold weekly coaching check-ins see 3 times higher engagement than those who don't. This isn't about being nice. It's about a specific, measurable practice that most organizations don't require, don't train for, and don't reward.
Compare that to the U military's after-action review culture. Every operation, every exercise, ends with a structured debrief. What was supposed to happen? What actually happened? What do we sustain? What do we improve? It's continuous, it's candid, and it's built into the operating rhythm. Nobody has to find time for it. It is the time.
The contrast with corporate annual reviews is stark. The military model is immediate, specific, and forward-looking. The corporate model is annual, vague, and backward-looking. Here's what you did wrong last year. Here's your rating. See you in 12 months. Gallup's data shows engagement correlates with feedback frequency, not feedback quality. A mediocre conversation every week beats a brilliant conversation once a year.
Because frequency signals something that quality alone can't. It signals that you matter enough to be checked in on regularly. The content of the conversation is almost secondary to the fact that it happens at all.
Which brings us back to the structural lock-in. The 70% figure hasn't moved because the underlying incentive structures haven't moved. Quarterly reporting rewards short-term thinking. Promotion criteria. Reward individual achievement over team development. Performance management is episodic and compliance-oriented. None of these were designed to produce engagement, and none of them have been redesigned.
The bad manager isn't a bug in this system. The bad manager is the predictable output. You select for individual performance. You don't train for people management. You measure outputs, not development, and you get exactly what the system was built to produce. The surprising thing isn't that 70% of people are disengaged. The surprising thing is that 30% aren't.
That 30%, the engaged ones, are often engaged despite the system, not because of it. They have a manager who figured out coaching on their own, or they're intrinsically motivated by the work itself, or they've found meaning that the organization didn't provide and doesn't reinforce. They're statistical noise in a machine that's optimized for compliance.
Daniel's question, are managers equally dissatisfied with employees, turns out to be the wrong question. The right question is, why does the system generate mutual dissatisfaction while only measuring one side of it? The manager isn't happy either. Only 30% of you managers are engaged, but their dissatisfaction doesn't get measured as dissatisfaction with my team. It gets measured as manager disengagement, which is a different thing.
That disengagement cascades. A disengaged manager doesn't coach. Their team disengages. The team's disengagement shows up in the numbers eventually. Turnover, productivity, quality. but by the time anyone notices, the manager has been producing disengagement for years, and nobody can trace it back to the source because the measurement system isn't designed to connect those dots.
It's a failure of organizational accounting. We track revenue per employee, cost per hire, attrition rate, all the hard numbers. But we don't track engagement debt, the way we track financial debt, and engagement debt compounds. Every year, a disengaged manager stays in place. They're producing disengaged employees who will take years to re-engage, even under better management.
The $8.8 trillion figure Gallup cites. That's essentially the accumulated engagement debt of the global economy, and nobody's booking it.
If the system is broken, what can you actually do about it? Let's get practical. Because most people listening aren't going to redesign their organization's promotion pipeline tomorrow morning. They need something they can act on now.
Gallup's data actually gives us three distinct answers, depending on where you sit. If you're an individual contributor, the single highest leverage move you can make is to change your manager. Not your company, not your industry, your manager. Gallup's 2026 report shows that switching teams within the same organization can shift your engagement from the 20th percentile to the 60th. Same employer, same pay bands, same HR policies, completely different experience.
Which is counterintuitive. Most people think the company is the problem. But if 70% of the variance is your direct manager, you might be one internal transfer away from a totally different work life.
And this is something you can actually control. You're not waiting for the CEO to have an epiphany about organizational design. You're finding a manager who coaches, who gives feedback, who treats development as part of the job.
If you're a manager yourself, the data points to one practice that matters more than any other: weekly check-ins. Not status updates, coaching conversations. Gallup found that managers who hold these weekly conversations see 3 times higher engagement than those who don't. The frequency is the mechanism. It signals that development is continuous, not annual.
The coaching versus supervising distinction is crucial here. A status update is, what did you finish this week? A coaching conversation is, what are you working on? Where are you stuck? How can I help you grow? Most managers default to the first because it's easier and nobody taught them the second.
For organizations, and this is the one that requires actual courage, stop promoting your top individual contributor to manager. Gallup's been recommending a separate career track with assessment gates for decades. Test for emotional intelligence, coaching aptitude, communication skills before you hand someone a team. Most companies treat management like a prize for high performance, rather than a distinct profession with its own qualifying criteria.
The manufacturing case study proves this isn't theoretical. That firm replaced 40% of its frontline managers when it shifted to a coaching model, and engagement nearly tripled. The cost of keeping the wrong managers in place is far higher than the cost of replacing them, but most organizations never run that calculation.
None of these fixes require rewriting the global economic order. They're specific, measurable, and Gallup has the data to back them. The frustrating thing is how few organizations actually implement them.
Even those fixes are band-aids on a deeper wound. If 70% disengagement is structural, and it's been stable for 2 decades, the real question isn't how to manage better. It's whether the organizational form itself is the problem.
That's the uncomfortable implication Gallup's data points toward, but never quite says out loud. We've spent 20 years trying to make traditional hierarchies more humane. Better managers, better feedback, better snacks, and the needle hasn't moved. At some point, you have to ask whether you're optimizing a structure that's fundamentally incapable of producing engagement.
Which is where the more radical alternatives start looking less fringe. Holacracy, self-managing teams, worker cooperatives, these aren't just utopian experiments anymore. They're attempts to solve the manager problem by redistributing or eliminating the manager role entirely.
The evidence is mixed. Holacracy at Zappos was famously messy. But the core insight, that concentrating people development authority in a single role creates a single point of failure, that insight holds up. When one person determines 70% of your work experience, the system is only as good as that person.
The system keeps producing the wrong person, because it was never designed to produce the right one. Which brings us to the forward-looking piece. AI is about to reshape middle management in ways that make this conversation urgent. If large language models can handle scheduling, reporting, performance tracking, the administrative skeleton of management, what's left is the coaching, the development, the human connection. The question is whether organizations will use that freed-up time to actually develop people or just eliminate the manager role and call it efficiency.
Automating bad management at scale. Same disengagement, fewer humans to blame.
And that's the fork in the road Gallup's data presents, even if Gallup wouldn't frame it this way. We can use the coming disruption to finally build systems that produce engagement, or we can use it to strip out the last human touchpoints and watch that 70% figure climb even higher.
Something to chew on. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1843, a French missionary on the island of Tanna in Vanuatu recorded a transient lunar phenomenon, a reddish glow on the dark limb of the moon, and attributed it to volcanic ash tinting the atmosphere, a pigment chemistry hypothesis that predated modern selenology by over a century.
A French missionary doing lunar pigment chemistry in the South Pacific in the 1840s.
Of course he was.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, find us at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Corn. Go find a manager who actually sees you.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.